Are you confused about real food and what's healthy and good for the planet? Do you need the facts about local, organic, and sustainable food? Well, get ready to change the way you eat. Get ready for The Appropriate Omnivore with Aaron Zober.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. I'm your host, Aaron Zober, exploring lifestyles in the world of real food. This is the fourth show since the pandemic, as COVID-19 and the shelter at home is having an effect on every person and every area of life. I'm exploring the topic from the perspectives of people in different areas in the real food industry. Today, Monica Ford of the Los Angeles Delivery Service Real Food Devotee makes a return to the program. Her service offers a wide variety of items, all made from scratch and sourced by local farmers and organic suppliers. Food delivery is an area which has seen a huge growth during the pandemic. Many, including myself, never had supermarket delivery in the past, and restaurant delivery was limited to pizza. So let's bring Monica out and hear her point of view as somebody who's been in the food delivery business before everybody was talking about it. Monica, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Aaron. I'm so happy to be here again, and I'm so glad you're doing well at this time of great transition.
Likewise, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, too, and very pleased that you're able to make it out to the show. I imagine with all that's going on, you probably have a busier schedule now.
So at Real Food Devotee in our commercial kitchen, we are still hopping and bopping and making lots of fermented and nutrient-dense foods and delivering it to homes all over Southern California. So we're really staying in contact with our small farmers who provide all of the local produce for our foods, and staying in close contact as well with our community of clients who are trying to keep their immunity just really well nourished at this time. You know, it's an important time to do that. And while it always is, I think this is a more important time to do that than ever. So yeah, we're in full swing.
And has delivery increased for you during the shelter at home?
We certainly did see a spike in deliveries at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. And especially as people were staying at home and other support systems in our communities like grocery stores and farmers markets were still working to transition and kind of pivot to support the communities with new processes, new ways of sanitizing and social distancing and all of those things. So we saw a big spike at that point, and things have gotten a little bit more steady. We're in a regular role of supporting our community of clients with our food deliveries, and I think we're all kind of transitioning to this new normal together.
We are, and going with that, I wonder about how, like you said at the beginning, with the grocery stores trying to make over the way that their whole model works. It was harder to get into them and find groceries. And has that gone hand in hand with your delivery service? For instance, if there's a certain item that's hard to find at groceries, are you unable then to provide that to your delivery clients?
Well, that is such a great point that you bring up. And I think it's something that maybe people are concerned about. So I would actually get a lot of emails from our clients asking, oh, are you having problems getting ingredients? Are you going to sell out of this item or that item? And the really wonderful thing is that since the inception of Real Food Devotee, we've made a real point of connecting with smaller local farmers. And because of that, we have seen no stoppage or delay in our ingredient sourcing. So if you're worried about not being able to find some sort of food at your regular grocery store, try going to a farmer's market and connecting with the farmers there, because they still have their ingredients. They're still out there in their fields growing, and they're still bringing it to the farmer's market, and it's still the freshest product you can get out there. So that's what we're doing. We're sourcing from those small farms, making sure that everyone who's buying from Real Food Devotee is part of our little tribe that is supporting those local farmers so that they can grow the freshest food available for us to use in our foods so that we're all well nourished. And they're also practicing regenerative farming, so they're keeping the earth a little healthier, which we still need during this time. We still need to have that as a point of importance for all of us It's good for us and the earth, and it's good for those farmers as well. So if you don't want to be without some food that you want, then go straight to the source instead of going to grocery stores where much of the produce anyway is sitting in warehouses for distribution many times for weeks before any of us can get it at our local grocery store.
That is a good point you make about buying from small local farmers. They don't have the issue that these big ag companies have with running out of supply. And given this is the appropriate omnivore, it also reminds me of how I remember a couple months ago, the whole issue of the meat shortage, and a lot of the ranchers that I know, they would talk about how you don't have to worry about that with them. The meat shortage has to do with these large industrial processing plants, but these small family ranchers, they were still in stock, and that was, I think, a great time if you weren't already to start buying your meat from local sources.
Yes, that's so true. And the other great thing that we should all consider as well is these small farmers and small meat processors are not having these issues of widespread COVID infections as well. So that's another thing to think about. And I think about it with my team as well. It's really important for me to not only support the health of my client, but to support the health of my team as well. So that's not happening in these big meat processing plants that we've heard about, these widespread infections and closures of the plants, and therefore having these meat shortages. We're not experiencing that with these pasture-raised, grass-fed farmers. They're taking better care of their teams. And one of the things I look for, particularly in the vendors that we use and the farmers we partner with, is not only that they're treating the earth well, not only that they're using organic practices in their growing, and not only that they're being humane to their animals, but also that they have ethical employment practices. And that means that you must care for your employees and their health. So that's another thing to think about through the looking glass of COVID.
So meat was one of the big items that there was a shortage of in conventional foods. Another one I think of, it's very much the opposite, white flour and baking flour. And the last time we had you on the show, we did a heavy focus on baking einkorn sourdough bread and gluten-free bread. And when I think of that, that's another advantage I see Real Food Devotee having is you're not using the conventional white flour and you use einkorn, this heirloom grain, and you use a gluten-free almond flour. So I imagine that that also was a benefit to you.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a slight shortage in einkorn, but that was mostly due to the fact that there was such a shortage in regular all-purpose flours that there was a run on einkorn. And I actually see that as a wonderful thing because I think that more people were introduced to einkorn, this ancient grain that naturally contains less gluten than our current flour, is much more easy to digest. And many people who are using einkorn are trying out a sourdough. In fact, I think that became kind of a running joke during the whole shelter in place, is that so many people began trying their hand at sourdough, which I think is this wonderful thing that came out of that. So we actually didn't experience a problem with getting einkorn. We did order ahead a little bit, and so we were able to keep our sourdough einkorn on our menu for Southern California and are still delivering that regularly. And I think that Jovial Foods, that produces a really beautiful einkorn flour in Italy, is readily shipping to people in the U.S. and abroad. So yeah, again, when you're choosing really nutrient-dense, clean foods, you're going closer to the source because you're usually not working with such big corporations. And so you're not going to see as many problems with supply through those companies. Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know about the einkorn shortage because I did know that there were certain types of flours that had shortage. Obviously, white flour was the one that had the largest shortage, the most demand. But one that I had noticed on a lot of these sites that there was a shortage of was rye bread, which makes sense because rye bread is a type of ancient grain that I think more people are familiar with. When you go to your delis, you get the corned beef on rye, and a lot of that isn't true sourdough, but with this, either people were using rye just to make the rye bread they know of, or I think some of them may have used that too for sourdough. So it's kind of interesting that the ones that people did choose, if you really wanted to make sourdough right away and you couldn't get the white flour, you had to choose some kind of grain. So I'm glad to hear that people actually chose einkorn, because I know so many people say that they feel the best.
Oh, yeah.
When they digest that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have quite a few clients who are gluten intolerant, but they can actually eat our einkorn sourdough without any issue. And part of that is because it just naturally contains less gluten.
Yes, it's amazing. And another item that I was hearing about a shortage of, this wasn't as popular as, say, flour or meat, but I did hear some people talking about how they would go on the Whole Foods Amazon delivery and they were out of sauerkraut. So there's another food that I feel like more people were eating because they knew about the health benefits of it during these times. And in fact, we had on our program Mac Anderson of Cleveland Kitchen, formerly Cleveland Kraut, and he was talking about how a lot of people were realizing the benefits of sauerkraut. So I know that you do sauerkraut and many other ferments. Have you seen an uptick in your ferments since the start of the pandemic?
Yeah, I definitely have. So we make a lot of different fermented foods, as you said, and fermented beverages. And one of the reasons for that is that all of the research and studies that have been done on probiotics or fermented foods that provide probiotics is that diversity is key. The greater the diversity in your microbiome or your gut bacteria balance, it correlates directly to better health, sturdy health, so less incidence of allergies, asthma, colds, and other illnesses that are more serious as well. So I think that was becoming more known even before the emergence of COVID. But after that, I think there was a little bit more of a focus for people. What can I do to really bolster my immune system? And I believe that that is one of the things, it's fermented foods. So we've seen more interest in that, more people asking questions about it, and also people looking for the best fermented foods. One of the things that I like to do personally is to practice a lot of wild fermentation. And in wild fermentation, that essentially means that we're not using a starter culture to ferment these foods. So say our kimchi or sauerkraut, we're not using a freeze-dried starter culture of any kind. We are just creating a hospitable environment inside the fermentation vessel for the bacteria that naturally occur on whatever produce we're using to proliferate, multiply, and be diverse. And the reason that they're more diverse than a starter culture is because bacteria change depending on the season or the type of produce. Is it cabbage? Is it carrot? Is it cilantro? Or where was that grown? Or what variety of cabbage is it? What season is it? So bacteria changes for many, many reasons. And that's how you can get the most diverse bacteria or probiotics to colonize your gut, rather than just using a starter culture, which is generally five or so specific strains of bacteria. You're kind of narrowing your health instead of broadening it. More diversity in any natural system means stronger health. And I think that's a really beautiful, natural mirror of what we should have in our society too. You know, nature is always trying to teach us about better health, whether it's mental, emotional, spiritual, societal, or physical.
Along with fermented foods, are there any other types of foods that you're seeing are more popular now?
Definitely bone broth as well. You know, I remember when I first started Real Food Devotee, people were like, bone broth, that sounds gross. And now it's kind of cool, you know? Mm-hmm. People are like, yeah, I heard I need bone broth. I heard that's good for me. And it really is an important part of immunity. Not only is it calming to us and it lowers inflammation in the body because of the gelatin it contains and the amino acids, but it's also detoxifying for us. It helps to seal the gut lining, which is what is protecting your immune system. 80% of your immune system resides behind that gut lining. And it's really important to have a nice sealed gut lining. So to avoid leaky gut, which many of us have heard about. But that's really one of the best benefits of bone broth. So if you have to remember a couple things about bone broth, it's sealing the gut lining and therefore bolstering your immune system because it's protecting it. And second, detoxifying you. When your detox pathways are clearer, you're able to handle more pathogens. But, you know, that could be environmental, or if you come into contact with someone who maybe has a cold or something else, you're able to detoxify and process things more quickly. Those are some of the really important benefits of bone broth. And I think more people are very interested in that. So, yes, our bone broth is going out to many homes right now.
I can see that more people are interested in that too. And I think bone broth, like sauerkraut, there was some rise in popularity in that before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Bone broth, I think it's been going on for a little while.
Yeah.
Ever since that article in the New York Times, that was back 6 or 7 years ago.
Yes.
So we've talked about the foods that have been on the rise a little before the pandemic, and then I think you could say the pandemic gave an extra boost, such as bone broth, sauerkraut, sourdough bread. But I think that also what's gotten a boost from the pandemic is the food delivery business in general. Would you say that the pandemic was what put food delivery on the map?
Yeah, it certainly became much more of a focus just by necessity, even. During the first part of the shelter-at-home phase of the pandemic, I think that a lot of restaurants or food makers who were not prepared yet to do delivery or even a really organized pickup situation, people turned to businesses that were already set up for delivery. And I think that's a really wonderful thing that we have those kind of systems in place. It enables a lot of people who wanted to get delivery, yes, but also people who found it hard to get out of their homes just in their normal lives. It was even more difficult during those first phase days of shelter at home. So elderly or lower income families just found it a bit harder to get food. And also with work closures being what they were, unemployment, and the shortages in the grocery stores. So food delivery that was already set up and ready to go was a really, really important part of our society and communities and became a huge support system. So even on our website for the first couple months, we had an option on our menu where people could go and just pledge a little donation for people in need. And we would take those funds, match them at Real Food Devotee, and deliver to people who had reached out and said that it was really hard for them to get food or hard for them to get out and get food. So this was many times elderly people, and we would deliver to them as well. So it was really a beautiful thing to see people chipping in for that. But yeah, I think that delivery became not just a convenience anymore, but actually an important, really important part of the food system during that time.
And you've been in food delivery for a long time. You could say you were in food delivery before it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So obviously you thought food delivery was the future, but were even you surprised at how this was what put food delivery on the map? Like, was this something that even you never in your wildest dreams thought that this would be the way that would get everyone to use food delivery?
No way. I definitely did not see this coming. It was such a huge surprise. I mean, I guess none of us really ever had a pandemic, you know, the reality of it in our minds or how society would have to change to accommodate it. So no, I never saw that coming. But one thing I really loved about just designing my business, the seeds of it from the beginning, my real goal was to make it possible for people to get traditionally prepared foods, so say long fermented foods or long simmered bone broth made with ingredients from farmers markets. And our current modern schedules of working 40 to 60 hours a week, two parents working with kids going to school and all their activities, it really precludes the time for most of us to get to the farmers market, much less cook all of our meals. So what I wanted to do is create this business or this group of people coming together to not only support farmers collectively, but to also be able to get all of those fresh ingredients in a more convenient way. that realistically fit into our modern schedule, because we haven't changed our modern schedule really yet, and I don't see that it's happening too quickly. Although, with all of us working at home, or many of us working at home, maybe some of that can change. But in the meantime, it's really important for all of us to have a convenient outlet to be able to support the food growers we want to support and support our health. So the delivery for me really came out of that, making a convenient way for us to all feed ourselves well without having this guilt or constant compromise on our health.
Before we began quarantining, there was a little bit of growing popularity in these delivery services, supermarket delivery services such as Instacart, the different ones for restaurant delivery such as Postmates, Grubhub, Uber Eats, DoorDash. But I think of another type of delivery service, which kind of goes along with what you were saying about buying directly from farmers, which are CSAs and CSA-type programs, some that expand a little out of just buying from this one farm and offer from a few different farms and even some more packaged goods. I'm talking about companies like Farm Fresh to You, Imperfect Produce, Spud. Do you see yourself more along the lines of a CSA than, say, a delivery service like Instacart or Postmates?
I think we're a little bit different than both of them. We're on, like, maybe the middle plane between both of them. So it's really interesting. What we do is not exactly meal delivery. We're kind of more of an a la carte menu, so people can order their bone broth, their gluten-free baked goods, their sourdough, their fermented foods, and a couple of little special of the week, like a dinner. Say last week we had Asian meatballs with a stir fry over zucchini noodles with a bone broth-based sauce. Super delicious. But I think it's in the middle of those two. So you might still, even if you're getting Real Food Devotee deliveries, maybe you still want a CSA box just to have a bit more produce for your normal everyday cooking or maybe your salad at lunch. And then your Instacart, maybe you still want that for other items. I'm not as familiar with Instacart, but I guess your packaged goods, you could still get through that. So we're somewhere in the middle of that. We're kind of like almost the patchwork between those two.
I do think that your service complements the other types more than supplements it. But something that also comes to mind is, in some ways, I think you address some of the concerns that people have about subscribing to these CSAs, in that a lot of times it may have food that they're not used to cooking with. They're not even familiar with the foods. And when they get it, they don't know what to do with it. Plus, there's also the busy schedule too, but I think more of an issue is a lot of people not knowing how to use some of these foods. And then the CSA boxes, a lot of them started providing recipes for people not familiar with that, but then we get back into the issue of time. So you kind of solve that of people who feel they don't have the time and they don't know what to do with some of these foods. That's where you come in.
Yeah, that's a really good point you make, Aaron. And I think it's really important for us to acknowledge that not having enough time in the current societal structure of our work schedules is a real thing. And really, how do we want to spend our time? If we're in this current matrix of work schedules and family life schedules, what's more important to us? Do we want to be cooking food from scratch? I think once in a while, most people do have time to do that, and it's really a cathartic, inspirational practice. It's kind of a meditational practice, and it's certainly stress relieving. But I think for us to say that everyone has time to do that every night or to expect people to do that is really unfair, and I think it creates a lot of guilt in many people. I would say if we have to make compromises and choices, maybe it's more important for some families to just be able to sit down to a nutrient-dense meal that they didn't have to spend 2 hours cooking from scratch. So that is why I began offering foods that, say, a family meal that the directions are literally put in oven for 10 minutes and add sauce. I think it's important to have quote unquote fast food once in a while, but there's absolutely no reason that that food should not give us vibrant health, super strong immunity, and allow us to nourish our children and still sit around the table and talk about our day and connect with each other. That's far more important than slaving away in the kitchen every day or feeling really guilty when you have to order something because you realize there's no way I can do 24 hours of work in 10 hours of waking time. And it's too bad we put that kind of guilt on people when there are services now like Real Food Devotee or other wonderful services and eateries that are now providing really healthy food. There's quite a few studies now about longevity. And one of the things that they're finding is that the real secret, the most important thing, a factor in longevity is community. So community requires time. We have these other little fixes for making your food. You can order from Real Food Devotee if you're in Southern California and get your long simmered bone broth delivered to your door and get some of your meals and your ferments and I'll ferment it for 2 months. You don't have to. But there's no fix I can make other than giving you that time that you're not in the kitchen for creating community, for you being able to spend time with your friends, for you putting a little bit fermented salsa on your child's taco and sitting down to enjoy it with them. There's no other fix for that except time. So I think if you have to make a compromise somewhere else to get that time with your loved ones, with your friends, it's far more important for the quality of your life and the longevity of your life than feeling guilty and staying in the kitchen for hours.
We've talked a lot about the foods that have become more popular during the times of the pandemic. Are there any foods that you've seen less popular with this?
I think people are turning away a little bit from sweets that are a complete negative as far as health or nutrition. For instance, I mean, I think that we should all have treats in our lives. Life is not about deprivation. So we do offer treats, but all of the treats on our menu are not a complete negative. So we're not using processed sugar or sweeteners. We're using natural sweeteners, maybe coconut sugar or raw honey derived from biodynamic farms, or maybe monk fruit, which is a zero on the glycemic index. So we're doing things like that, and we're putting them in the treat environment of something like panna cotta, you know, like a nutrient-dense coconut cream, natural vanilla, grass-fed gelatin, and a little bit of monk fruit. So that's a perfectly delicious sweet treat, but it's not going to be a hit to your immune system. It's actually going to be a support for you. So I think that people are turning away from just crappy cookies to things that are kind of a better compromise that aren't really a hit to their immune system, because I think people are really focused on keeping a strong immune system now. And I'll tell you, I would say that is one of the most wonderful gifts you can give yourself. I am living through this time of COVID with everyone else, and I honestly do not feel scared. I feel that my immune system is very resilient, and it was built to deal with these kind of situations. And because I've given it what it needs to build itself in what I feel like is an almost bulletproof way, I don't feel fear, which also helps to lower your immunity.
Yeah, and I think going with how you don't want to have fear, you shouldn't completely give up something that you like. Because I know there are some practitioners who say, oh, during this, to completely stay immune, avoid any kind of sugar, sweetener. An interesting thing with me is I've bought some sweets, some sweetened with honey, and even a couple with cane sugar. But the interesting thing is I was very concerned at first that I would gobble these up all away. And it actually tended to be the opposite. I use these once in a while as treats, and I personally think it actually helps that I bought them and put them in my house. I feel like had I not done that, I just feel punished and would be saying, oh, stop punishing yourself. Let's pig out on these treats. I shouldn't have done that. Instead, it's the thing, well, I know I have the option, but I don't need to necessarily have it every day.
Yeah, Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no reason we should live in deprivation. We should live in joy. And part of that is enjoying a sweet treat now and then. And that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And honestly, even if you have a donut from any donut shop around there once in a while, if you're eating 80 to 90% great nutrient-dense food and you're a fairly healthy person, you know, you're not dealing with an issue that you're actively trying to heal, then you're going to be fine. And it's okay to do that.
Right. So it goes with what we were saying about how these different types of food businesses all complement each other. And so if you're ordering from a delivery service like Real Food Devotee most of the time, then you can occasionally use Grubhub to get your local fast food place.
Absolutely. Maybe you want some Chinese food delivered, right?
Right.
Who doesn't love eating Chinese food out of boxes at home, watching Netflix? That's the best. But if you have a little Real Food Devotee broth or your own bone broth at home, and maybe you can pour a little bit on that or have a cup of broth with it. Sometimes these things can be a vehicle for wonderful foods as well. And there's certainly no reason to not enjoy eating Chinese food with chopsticks while you're watching Netflix.
That becomes a good point about actually doing the delivery.
Yeah.
And I sometimes have local fast food delivered to me. The advantage, though, of having it at home is instead of using those packets of iodized salt, I can put some nutrient-dense sea salt on my French fries.
Great point. Yes, that is so true. And I think that it's great when we can begin to open ourselves up to these little hacks because they really do make a big difference for us. Salt that you bring up is wonderful. So you're getting more minerals with those French fries. And it is wonderful for our electrolytes, for staying hydrated. So there are a lot of really good things about that. And just that little addition makes a big difference in those fries.
And I like that you brought up about Chinese delivery, Chinese takeout, because that's another type of food, along with pizza, that was one of the few types of restaurant services that did delivery. But now you see all these. I'd actually heard about some of these. I think they were actually kind of taken off a little bit before the pandemic because I'd heard about Postmates maybe a year or so ago, and I had started to see when you go on these websites for restaurants that they now offer delivery options. So the big question is, what will the food and restaurant industry be like after the pandemic? Do you see this as a change where a lot of people will like these new habits they have of food delivery?
I think people have become more comfortable and savvy with food delivery, more people than before. So I think that some of that is going to stick. I also think that many of us are still not sure how long we're going to feel moved to be more careful out in the world and interacting with groups of people or being in restaurants. I also think that there's a faction of people who are like chomping at the bit to be able to get out and go to a restaurant.
Oh, I know many of those.
Yeah. And that's okay, too. So it'll be interesting to see where it all falls. I don't know that there's a true end point to this, but when things begin to transition a bit back to quote unquote normal. And I'm a big believer in transformation. So I'm really hoping that not everything is going to go back to quote unquote normal. I'm hoping that people are going to keep a little bit more of a focus on their physical health and also their mental and spiritual health. I think that many of us, as we were given this sort of forced opportunity to be at home with ourselves and maybe even have a little more silence or less noise in our minds constantly, I hope that we're becoming more in touch with ourselves and what we really want to see in the world. So I'm actually not looking forward to getting back to normal. I'm looking forward to a little bit more of a transformation in our society and maybe a greater importance put on each of our own happiness and a collective communal happiness.
I think that would be great. So we focused a lot of the show on how the way people are getting food has changed. So now let's focus on Real Food Devotee specifically. How have the operations for your business changed in order to stay safe?
Yeah, we've done a lot. I would say that we were a very balanced clean kitchen even before the incidence of this. I mean, our health inspections are usually like a 98 to 100%. In fact, our last inspection was 100. But part of that is because we do fermentation. So we're always really concerned with a perfect balance in our kitchen. And it really is kind of a sacred space for us. We're in a building in downtown Los Angeles. That's where our commercial kitchen is. It's a key card entry only building. And during this time of transition and COVID, only Real Food Devotee employees, team members are allowed into our kitchen. We all wear a hairnet, we've always done that, and gloves, of course, and then a hair wrap around that to keep everything in place. But now we are wearing masks as well in our kitchen, and of course, hand washing and all of that. But that was, of course, our usual, and any good ethical food maker is also doing that, proper sanitation, etc. But some interesting, unique things that we do is we package majority of our food in glass, if not compostable containers. And all of our glass jars are sterilized at over 240 degrees for over half an hour, which is very unique. Most people do not do that. We pressure seal our food in jars, so it is airtight. We also do a little something with our team every morning. We all come together in the morning and we just kind of do a quick meditation to have a great day. And we all take a little shot of immune boosting fermented tonic. And we also take time in the middle of the day to have a family meal. And I believe that's really important for a few reasons. Number one, it's really important to treat my team well because they are the backbone of Real Food Devotee. And they really care about what they are making for people. And I believe that counts. I believe energetically that makes our food super high vibe food. And that's one of the reasons that on almost every single order that we get online, we have a little section called Love Letters to the Chef, and we always get a little love note. And I believe that's one of the reasons you can feel the energetic uplift in our food. Second, I believe it's really important to support my staff's health as well, their physical health. So I want them to get that nutrient-dense meal in the middle of their day to power them through their day and to support their immunity when they go out into the world. And that's why we take those immune boosting shots as well. So that's kind of what we're doing. All of the sanitation and everything, we've always been doing that. And we've always been even sterilizing our jars at 240 degrees for 30 minutes, which is kind of like a weird thing you won't find in the rest of the industry. But it's really important to us to have a really sacred, high vibe, clean spot to make everybody's food.
I think that goes for a lot of the sustainable food industry, that they've always had very sanitary conditions mm-hmm. for the reason that they don't use things that conventional food uses, such as heating or preservatives. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that comes to mind is the raw milk industry. They've always had much more sanitary conditions than the regular dairy farms because of the whole USDA and FDA looking over them. But the thing is, that actually makes me want to buy raw milk more. Like, why can't conventional dairy, why can't pasteurized dairy have those clean conditions too? What gives them an excuse to be dirty just because high heat is applied?
Yeah, I think a lot of times food makers, especially more of an industrial size of food brands, rely on what we call kill steps. So for instance, high heat pasteurization. And they feel that then they can sort of skimp on other measures. First of all, it's economically beneficial for them because of course they're spending less money on sanitation and other steps. But also when you don't respect or revere the raw ingredients that you're working with, I think that people tend to not treat them as well. We have farmers who set aside really beautiful produce or the most special little baby microgreens or beautiful summer squash that were just the best from that farmer's crop. And there's a certain reverence there and a certain importance you feel in working with produce that was grown with such care or meat that was humanely raised, we're going to treat that with a reverence and the sacred nature of those ingredients as we prepare them with traditional methods, and then as we deliver them to people's doorsteps so that they can share them with reverence as well on their table. So when a company starts from ingredients that are not high quality, I think that things evolve from there, and they evolve with that tone, with that lack of quality. But when you receive quality to start with, we're much more likely, much more motivated to treat those ingredients well. And all steps following, I think, are required to be top shelf.
With more people being concerned about safety and about health, do you think that the pandemic is going to give an advantage to more organic, real food companies, and some of the conventional companies are going to suffer?
I think that real food companies will have more of an advantage because people are seeing that, wow, my everyday health is important, because apparently we could have a surprise global pandemic. So, yeah, I think that people are going to continue to be more supportive of their immune systems and their family's immune systems. And brands that are already concerned with turning a profit while providing ethically good food, I think that those brands will have an advantage. Larger companies that are providing food products that are maybe not as clean, I think will be at a disadvantage until they pivot. And that's the beautiful thing about transformation like this, transformation of minds and desires and people voting with their dollars. Those larger companies are going to have the motivation now to either purchase companies that are already making food that is beneficial and nutrient dense to the people who purchase it, or they will have to come up with their own products that are in line with those quality standards. And I don't see anything bad about that. That is a beautiful pivot that we all needed to make anyway. And I'm sorry that it took a pandemic for us to look at that. But I do know that it's in our human nature that sometimes we have to hit a really hard obstacle in order to see what's important.
I don't see anything bad either about the issue of these larger conventional food companies getting into the natural foods world. And in fact, we saw that just a week or two ago with Nestle's purchase of Vital Proteins, the wonderful collagen company.
Yes, that's really amazing, isn't it?
I think so. It shows the importance of foods like collagen and gelatin. And I think that's a good thing that these larger companies are realizing the importance of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even though I drink loads of bone broth, I drink it just as a sipping tea, but I also use it as a base in soups, sauces, sauteing vegetables, making any grains. I use it instead of water when I'm making rice, for instance.
Oh, love it.
Yeah. Oh, it makes it so delicious. But I also do use collagen as well. So I'll mix it into a smoothie or even just into a drink, or even if I'm having like a little juice, I'll mix it into that. And the reason for that is that it's really difficult in modern life to get enough nutrients. We've kind of depleted our soils, and that affects not only animal foods, but plant foods as well. So it's really important to get some of those extra little supplements. For collagen, it gives you really nice elastic skin, nice juicy joints, and really helps with nails and hair as well as the gut lining. So it's a little boost, and I really believe in using that, and there aren't too many supplements that I'm super keen on.
Yes, there are many ways you can get your collagen, and bone broth is one of them. At the end of last year, I had Pamela Schoenfeld, author of The Collagen Diet, on, and she talked about how there's many different ways that you can get your collagen, whether it's bone broth, or you can get it through some cuts of meat, such as tendon and oxtail, and you can also get it through chicken skin. So many different ways, and it's kind of best to try all of those ways.
Yeah, diversification is always a wise way to go. We also offer on our menu some alternative ways of getting gelatin and collagen as well, like Jell-O cups and panna cotta and little gummies, as well as the bone broth and soup, because I do think it's important to get as much as we can. It would be extremely difficult to OD on it.
Yes. And speaking of your menu, are there any plans for new product offerings or expansion to other areas for Real Food Devotee?
Well, we're always putting up new little items on the menu. So our online menu, which any of you who are listening can see anytime you'd like at realfooddevotee.com, or you can visit us on Instagram, where we'll post pictures from our kitchen and behind the scenes shots and also recipes and little health notes as well. But yeah, every week we put up a new menu. So a lot of our staple items are there, but we do a new flavor of Jell-O every week, or panna cotta. We do gluten-free vegan brownies or other treats. And all of those treats are made with the highest quality ingredients. For our gluten-free items, we're not using these weird rice flour mixes. We're using truly nutrient-dense ingredients or even flourless items. So yeah, we always have new items on the menu. In fact, this week we're introducing some caviar, so some fish roe, which is an incredibly nutrient-dense food. And right now, particularly in the Western world, we just have such an imbalance of omega-3s and omega-6s. And so a really great way to kind of help to balance that in our diets is to get more seafood. And you really can't get much more nutrient dense than fish roe. So this is a very mild fish roe. It's a Kaluga hybrid, for anyone who knows about the different varieties of caviar. It's very economically priced. It's ethically sourced. It's an absolutely delicious food. And you can have it with crackers, which is kind of the traditional way of doing it. But I personally love it just over my salads. And just a little bit is such a big boost to your nutrition. And there's a really cool part of most seafoods, but just talking about fish roe, the interaction of DHA in fish roe and other seafoods with the sun is really magical. So if any of you have ever used spray-on tan, you'll notice there's DHA in it. And one of the reasons for that is it helps you to get this beautiful tan. But that's also helpful in not getting sunburned, unless you really overdo it in the sun. But it's a beautiful way to be able to stay out in the sun and get that vitamin D. So there are just a lot of benefits to it, and most of us don't get enough of it.
We're just about out of time here. It's always a pleasure having you on the program. Before you go, give the listeners the web address where they can order your menu for delivery again.
Sure thing. Yes. Same, Erin. I love being on your show and chatting with you about my obsession, real food.
Mine too.
Yes. So if anyone in Southern California would like to order and have real food delivered to your door, you can see our menu at realfooddevotee.com or connect with us on Instagram at realfooddevotee. Look forward to connecting with you all. And even if you don't want to order, if you live somewhere else in the country, check out the menu or the Instagram site just for your own information, maybe your own ideas. If you're fermenting at home, check out what we have on the menu. Maybe you want to replicate one of those recipes or those ingredients for you to make something at home, especially if you're bored at home right now in quarantine.
Excellent. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Erin.
That's all for this episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. Follow me on social media for information on the next episode. And to make sure you never miss any of my podcasts, go to iTunes and subscribe to The Appropriate Omnivore. You can also listen to all of my podcasts on my website, appropriateomnivore.com. There you can find recipes from the guests I interview, plus all of my articles covering lifestyles in the world of real food. Until next time, my pantry is officially closed.